Good morning. Coming up on 7:45 here on the Mighty 690. And it is time for our Green Side Up program. We have guests from K-State Extension in studio with us. We have Dave and Rolling and Wendy Powell here today. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
All right. Good to see you here. And I guess this is, I think, the first time we've been able to talk since the Interstate Fair and Rodeo. Were you able to make it out there at all? Check things out?
Yes. It was a hot, hot week.
It was incredibly hot.
It was good.
I mean, the hottest week of the year.
Yeah, lots of fun.
Now, did you have any of your kids make it out there to show some stuff, Wendy?
Yep, we had lots of exhibits in the exhibit hall, and then my daughter also had her bucket calf out there. So.
Very good.
Yep.
Very good. So always an exciting time. So here we are with Davin on this segment, and I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Scrapey, and I understand that there is a kind of a notable case out there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, about a month ago, a sheep in Oregon was found to have scrapies. And if I remember right, it was a sheep that was a market lamb. So a little less drastic of a case than if it were to have been a breeding ewe. And more in a herd setting, but it does serve as an important reminder about why biosecurity is important for sheep and goat producers, and then also the importance of the Scrapey program and the requirements for tagging that we have. So the big thing about the Oregon case is for the United States to be declared scrapie free, we have to go 7 years without a case of scrapies. And that's because scrapies is a prion disease. So it takes at least 2 years, usually 2 to 5 years, for an animal that is carrying scrapies to develop those symptoms and the disease to develop. So in the United States, the last case of scrapies was in 2021. So we were actually getting really close to hitting that 7 year mark where we could be declared free of scrapies. And people might be wondering, like, why that is such a big deal, because we don't have a lot of scrapie cases anymore, thankfully. This has been, you know, the first case in the United States in 5 years. There hasn't been a case in Kansas in about 10 years, but there's a really big market available for sheep and goat producers if we're able to export our meat to other countries. That would open up more marketing possibilities for U.S. producers. And for some countries to be able to sell lamb and goat meat to those countries, we have to be declared scrapie free. So that's where this 7 years being able to be declared scrapie free really comes into play, is the economic aspect and marketing our meat, that product, to other countries.
So for folks who maybe don't know, what is scrapies and what are the signs?
Yeah, so scrapies is a prion disease. So it's caused by an abnormal folded prion in sheep. It is a genetic disease. Sheep and goats can both get it because sheep is a little bit longer industry-wise. There's been more research done with sheep, and you can kind of help control the disease a little bit by genetic selection, because sheep, if they have that genetic mutation that allows them to get scrapies, producers can, you know, not select for sheep that carry that trait. So as the name suggests, it kind of got its name because it's a neurological disease. And one of the most notable symptoms of scrapies is animals, really start scratching. So sheep, are wool sheep, they would be losing a lot of wool because they would be scratching so much. A lot of times it's kind of comparable to mad cow disease in the sense that it is a neurological disease. The one important difference that's really big is that scrapies is not transmittable to people. And while the sheep, if they have that genetic component that allows them to be able to get scrapies, they can only catch it, I guess you could say, by coming in contact with another animal that has scrapies. So that's why way back in the 50s and 60s, you would hear of almost like not whole herds getting it, but being really prevalent in a herd. And unfortunately, to control it, that herd would have to be euthanized. Thankfully, we don't have to take those extreme measures anymore because a lot of work has been done with the scrapie program and the scrapies tags to control the disease and get it down to where this is the first case we've had in 5 years.
So how do the tags work?
So for the tags work by you call the USDA office. I can pull up that number really quick, and you get a premise ID number. So that premise ID number is going to go with your name and address, and it starts with this abbreviation for state. So for Kansas, they all start with KS, and then it's a number that goes specifically to that herd. So if a case were to come up, they could track where that animal came from to keep the disease from spreading. And then, of course, the other part of that tag is the animal's individual number. And to get the premise ID, you can call the USDA. That number is 1-866-USDA-TAG. And getting a premise ID is free, and for your first time getting it, they'll also provide you with 100 free plastic tags to get started. But I know sometimes folks have a preference in the style or the size of tag they like. So once you have that premise ID, you can order scrapie tags through about any livestock supply company that carries tags. You just give them your premise ID number, and they make them for you. And it also goes back to the importance of keeping accurate records of your herd. And an easy way to do that with sheep and goats is to tag those lambs and kids. So you know numbers 5 and 6 go to you number 48, for example. So if you just, you know, use scrapie tags to tag your lamb and kids when they hit the ground, that helps you improve your record keeping, and then those lambs and kids are ready to go no matter where they go in their lifespan. And for 4-H and FFA members that show at county fairs, most all county fairs have the requirement that sheep and goats have a scrapie tag in them. And for registered animals, because they're registered and those registration papers track where that animal comes from, as long as that animal is tattooed and their registration papers travel with them, they do not need a scrapie tag because the registration papers are doing the same thing that the scrapie tag program would.
Very good. So it's good to know on that. And so obviously I know there's always hype when something like this comes out, but it's been a lot worse before. So this is really, really fairly minor.
Yes.
Compared to
yeah.
What we've been through.
Yes, exactly. So, like back in the 50s and 60s, it was way worse. Well, this case in Oregon got everyone's kind of attention back on scrapies, and it's really unfortunate. It is not the concern that it once was, but it is an important reminder to stay vigilant, follow those requirements for the scrapie identification program, because if we all work together and do our part, then hopefully in the near future the U.S. can be declared scrapie free And I will say, I know some folks don't have a premise ID and they don't have scrapie tags, and kind of their argument for that is, well, I don't need one because if I go to the sale barn to sell my goats and sheep, the sale barn will put a scrapie tag in there for me. And that is a thing, but the sale barn is going to charge you for that tag, and they're going to charge you more than even if you bought that tag yourself.
Sure, it's the convenience thing.
Yeah, so just going ahead and getting the tags and tagging your animal yourself, it will save you a couple bucks and maybe help you improve your herd record keeping. That can help you, you know, improve the bottom line in your herd and a lot of other things.
Well, that's a great reminder. So, David, if folks do have questions on this and they want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
They can reach me by calling our Altamont office. That number is 620-784-5337.
Okay, very good. And Wendy, what are we going to be talking about in our next segment?
We're going to talk about brush hogging pastures.
Okay, all right. It'll be good. It's all coming up here on our Green Setup program here on the Mighty 690. Right now we have 75 degrees as we approach 8 o'clock. We'll have a check of Fox News, local headlines, and get you right back in to Green Setup here today on the Mighty 690. Good morning. It is 8:11 here on the Mighty 690. We have joining us in studio from K-State Extension's Wildcat District, Wendy Powell and Dave Enrolling once again. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
And this segment we have Wendy Powell, a livestock production agent for the Extension District. And Wendy, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about mowing our pastures.
Yes. It's the time of year when sometimes our weed crop is outshining our grass crop or our desirable forage. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about when is the right time to brush hog or maybe not brush hog and address some other issues in the pastures.
Very good. So I know that, yeah, it is kind of... it's been a long time since it rained, so things are kind of interesting out there. So, but should producers routinely mow their pastures?
So that gets to be one of those go-to answers for extension agents. It depends. And it really does depend on the grazing carrying capacity of that pasture, the weed production in that pasture, and then also what are your plans for that pasture for the next few months. So there's a lot of good pasture managers out there that don't mow at all. And it's a tool. It's not a cure-all. So if you mow this year, you're still going to have those same weed problems next year. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
Very good. So why isn't mowing always the answer?
Yeah, so kind of what I alluded to with that carrying capacity comment, weeds are often a symptom of larger problems. So whether that problem is overstocking, overgrazing issues, or a low soil fertility, or a combination of both of those. So low pH, low nutrition in the soil to grow the grass that you want. But really, mowing only addresses the symptom and not the root cause of the problem.
Gotcha. So when does mowing make sense?
Yeah, so this is the time of the year that we often will see some brush hogging activity. And I use the word brush hogging and mowing similarly because brush hogging is a brand name similar to like Kleenex versus facial tissue. So that's the difference in those terms there. It makes sense whenever we need to reduce the weed seed production. So there's a lot of mare's tail out there right now, and those weed seeds are very prominent, and you can see them from the roadside. Even at 70 miles an hour, you can identify those mare's tail plants. And so those are the seeds that we want to make for sure that we get knocked down before they become viable. And we'll also be preventing those weeds from shading out the grasses that we want to grow. And then also if we're putting cattle back in there or other livestock, then that removal of those tough stems can help protect some eyes and open up some more grazing space underneath those weed, those large weed producing areas. So I was talking with a producer the other day. He had been brush hogging and he discovered Bermuda grass under his really tall weeds. And so that was another option for him to so do some soil testing and maybe do some fertilizing to promote that Bermuda grass this spring, and use his pasture in a little different way. So it's one of those, it could be a discovery too.
Sure. So if someone is going to mow, when should you do it?
So ideally you're going to do that as soon as the livestock are moved out of the paddock or the pasture for the season or for that rotation. And that will give the grass time to regrow before the cattle or the livestock come back in. And if you wait too long before brush hogging, then you're not going to be able to raise the brush hog high enough to prevent cutting off all of the good forage down at the bottom. So mowing heights differ on brush hogs, just like they do on mowers and lawn mowers. And so you want to do that as soon as possible to prevent those weeds from getting too far out of control.
Now, is it possible to mow too much?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time you go through that pasture with any piece of equipment, it costs you time and money. So doing it too much is going to increase your expenses.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So what about options that producers have besides mowing?
Yeah, so that's really the root of that'll help fix the problem. You can manage the grazing carrying capacity properly, so making for sure that you're not putting too many animals out there so they overgraze the pasture, or too few animals out there that aren't able to consume all of the forage available. In times of high rains, we can get into those situations. That's a fun problem to have, but typically we have these more drought problems. Maintain the adequate fertility and soil pH. So do your soil testing, even in native pastures. Do your soil testing. Make for sure that your soil nutrition levels are on target. Apply herbicide applications when they're appropriate. So a lot of times this is going to be spot spraying, or get out there with your chainsaw and cut down some cedar trees. And that's also going to prevent some tick problems you might run into in the future. And then also we have a Daven with us, so we can even talk about some sheep and goats, multi-species grazing strategies. So there's lots of opportunities.
Sure. Absolutely. So, and yeah, if you can get those animals to do it for you, then be a big win there. Although they might not be as consistent, but you know, as our little lines.
Yes, yeah, that's true. One of the big benefits of brush hogging is to make for sure that pasture does look nice from the road. But David, have you talked with many folks that are just using sheep or goats for pasture weed management?
So I haven't talked to folks that are using it in their own pastures as their exclusive weed management option. I have talked to a couple different people that use sheep and goats. Their business is renting out. Typically, the people I've talked to use goats to go clear out weeds for towns or cities or different folks. They'll hire their herd out and take them, and they'll graze that area, get rid of all the weeds, and then they'll move on to the next job. But I have been following along. Oklahoma State University has been doing a really interesting research study on multi-species grazing using goats along with cattle, and using the goats as the weed control in pastures, because goats are browsers instead of grazers, so they naturally go to those woodier plants, so they don't exactly compete with the cattle for the grass. They will eat some grass, but they go for other plants that cattle typically don't eat and usually are what's considered weeds in cattle pastures. And they've had a lot of success with that. And also, goats are kind of a weed control option that you do have some expenses, obviously, with purchasing them, and a little expense with caring for them throughout the year. But, you know, they've had a herd of does that have been grazing with cattle, so then they're able to sell those kids. That has been, they've found that to be profitable as well. The goat market's been really good the last several years. The one challenge with grazing goats with cattle is goats do need a little bit different style fence to keep them contained. So in the Oklahoma State study for their perimeter fences, they use at least 6-strand barbed wire they may have done 8 strand in a couple areas, and then they've also used some hot wire in different areas, and also, you know, electric fencing if they want that rotational grazing setup. So you do have a little bit higher fencing costs if you want to turn goats out with cattle, because you have to put a couple more strands of barbed wire up or use electric fencing. And then goats are a little bit more prone to having problems with predators, unfortunately. But if folks have more questions about that, I'd be happy to visit with them about it.
Very good. So, awesome. Moving back to the machinery, how big a mower should producers use if they're looking to do this?
Get a big one. As yep. big as your tractor can handle is the ideal size. So you don't want to overload your tractor, but you also want to minimize the time that you have to spend mowing. So get as big a mower as your tractor will handle.
Very good. Now, how is clipping different than mowing when it comes to hay?
Yeah, so whenever you're mowing hay, you're really wanting to cut the hay off at your desired stubble height, and it leaves the rest of the plant intact. And so it just lays over and is allowed to cure, and then you'll rake and bale that and put it in a bale of hay for livestock feed for a different time of the year. But brush hogging, clipping, this is more of a shredding of the plant material. And so you actually leave it in the pasture and it decomposes in place. Sometimes other animals will come by and eat on it a little bit, but it's not going to be removed from the location it's at. So the machine kind of chops it up just a little bit more as well.
Gotcha. So anything else we should know when it comes to this topic?
Yeah, so before you get started on brush hogging your pasture, or while you're sitting there running through the pasture, think about, why are the weeds there? What can be changed in the next grazing season, in the next year, to minimize your time spent with the brush hog? That's really what we need to be working on, because like I said, brush hogging is fine, but it's not going to cure your problems.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, it's a good reminder on that. And Wendy, if folks do have questions on this topic, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, give me a holler at the Fredonia, the Wilson County Extension Office. That phone number is 620-378-2167.
All right, and I know you ladies had some save the dates for us.
Yes. The OCAN Cattle Conference has been slated for January 22nd, and we're going to host that this year at the Coffeyville Stockyards.
Okay, very good.
And coming up on November 3rd at 6 p.m., I will be hosting a Cayo Biology and Management workshop at our Girard office. Dr. Drew Ricketts, our wildlife specialist, will be coming down for this workshop. And I've had him down for this workshop before. A couple years ago, he did one in Parsons, and it's always super interesting. He gives a lot of good information on controlling coyotes, if livestock producers are having problems with that, but also a lot of great information about how kind of coyotes work and their kind of pack system, which is always really interesting to learn more about.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate you ladies joining us as always. A lot of good stuff on the way, and we look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you.
That is Wendy Powell, Dave and Rolling here with our report here today from K-State Extension on our Green Setup program brought to you by Green Acres. Straight ahead, we'll have this week's Wheat Report, Agriculture Today on the way, and then we'll get you into Open Line here in just a few minutes.